This is the Future of IP Protection podcast, brought to you by MorphVision. This show is dedicated to arming companies with the skills, know-how, and technology they will need to future-proof their IP protection strategy for the years ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Future of IP Protection podcast. I'm Brandi Spence, Head of Marketing with MorphVision.
And our guest today is the seasoned professional, Matthew Walters Bowens, Senior Legal Analyst at Warner Music Group. Matthew, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello, Brandi. Thank you for having me.
Hi. Let's dive right in. Listen, as I mentioned, you are the Senior Legal Analyst at Warner Music Group. However, you have a very interesting background well beyond that. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, your journey, and how you landed at Warner Music Group?
Sure. Ah, goodness, where to start?
A lot, I'm sure.
Well, in regards to performance, which is how I started, really, I grew up in a little Baptist church. Actually, it was Methodist, I think, but my family's Baptist, and I loved singing from an early age. In high school, I went away to a great school that I love in Westchester called the Master School. Shameless shout out to them that I didn't know how to do. But I got into theater and singing there and went to college for it and did a few young artist programs in opera and loved doing theater productions since I've graduated. My favorite role was probably the donkey in Shrek in a smaller production. And I've done heavy things like Parade and just a bunch of things that aren't quickly coming to mind right now. But I really love singing and I've recorded some of my own music. You can find more at www.matthewwb.com.
I will definitely be linking to that.
And around the end of my college, my bachelor's in arts and music, I started thinking, okay, Matthew, I don't want to just be a starving artist, because I like eating too much and I'm a Taurus and I value my stability. So what day job do you want? And I got into paralegal lane after looking at like the Bureau of Labor Statistics and figuring out where the best stability is. I wanted to go into bankruptcy law, but no bankruptcy firm would have me. So I had to settle for an internship at Louis Vuitton.
Oh my God. You're settling.
It's terrible.
You poor thing. Bankruptcy Louis Vuitton.
Yeah. And I mean, it was pretty cool, Brandi. And I never even thought like that was going to be an option for me. But getting time there and being able to do anti-counterfeiting as well as enforcement was really fun and knocked me into intellectual property. A bunch of law firms later, now I'm at Warner Music Group. Loved everything I got to learn from my time at law firms, from international trademark prosecution to domestic. Now that I'm in-house, I do a little bit more enforcement than I did when I was in the law firm side. But that's my background. And now that I'm in-house, I have to take care of domain names, which is often married to trademarks, even though they're not. But it's great. And I'm very happy with my career experience thus far.
So you kind of came full circle, right? With all this music background. Now you're all in the music industry, which is perfect. And that's starving, I'm sure.
No. In fact, I have to actively starve myself. I like fasting. That's what I mean, people. I don't promote starving. But I do like fasting.
Yeah, I know what fasting is all about, trust me. So talk to me about what motivates you. What's the most exciting thing? I mean, what gets you up in the morning about your job?
The cool thing that I like about trademarks and intellectual property in general is the fact that I'm just helping an individual or an entity, a group of people, protect their new ideas. It's really fun to see these things develop from a nascent phase and know about them before they even hit markets. So that's a fun little thing that makes me feel like an insider. And being a creative myself, I also get to look at kind of what the thought processes are in these businesses that, you know, have money behind them and see, oh, maybe I should be thinking that way as well, or, you know, whatever. So that's what I like about trademarks.
All right, right. And now, considering your years of experience in the field, and, you know, between the different companies and law firms, I'm sure you've seen a myriad of changes in the IP landscape. Can you share some of your observations and how you've seen it evolve throughout your career?
Sure. So the nature of IP is dynamic. It's always going to be, I think, fundamentally changing because it is what's supporting whatever commerce is in the day and age. So one consistent thing that has never changed is it's changing.
Right.
Some things that I think have changed since I've started are, well, I started with physical goods, okay? And now, in addition to any physical enforcement that you have to do and police raids that you have to coordinate or whatever, a lot more internet and electronic enforcement that you have to do. And I've only been doing this for a little over a decade, but it's the dramatic increase that I've seen. It's there. It's substantial. Something lately that I've noticed is what like people like to call blanding. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't. What is that?
So when you register a trademark, you know, you want to be as distinctive as possible. And if you're not, you want to acquire distinctiveness is what they call it. And what that means is that you're recognizable from your competition. And a lot of brands, mostly bigger brands, but even some small brands will try to just put whatever their name is in very nondescript font and trademark it. And I don't know why this trend is happening. Maybe it's like just the artistic decision, but it can make it harder to protect an item from a trademark standpoint because courts will argue it's not distinct. And that's it. It's as simple as that.
Right.
Something that I've noticed nowadays.
Very interesting. Can you share some of those examples with us?
Sure. So some of the examples that come to mind are mostly luxury names like Yves Saint Laurent, for example. They have a very stylized, iconic trademark that they've now kind of blanded to just kind of basic font Saint Laurent. Again, with like Burberry, London, England, it's also been kind of taken to basic font. And these bigger names, Balmain Paris, basic font, Berluti, these bigger brands, like they can get away with it, but for a smaller upstart, you need distinctiveness, all right? And that's a struggle because you need to sometimes change their artistic vision if they're new.
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but I can see that being the case now. Well, let's discuss what are some of the unique challenges that you have faced with IP in the music industry, and how have you navigated some of those?
Well, personally, when I make music, I like to not listen to music for a long time because, you know, you'll get sued for any little thing.
Right. Yeah. And
you can unconsciously copy someone's work if you've been listening to it recently. So I like to just make spaces for my own creativity, quiet spaces where I can just like have my own original ideas. As far as from a business perspective, things that I faced, well, now that I'm in-house doing music, well, you know, they're not unique. You have to do this regardless of what field you're in, but we're just watching the various marks, mostly for labels and artists, making sure that we action things that are egregious and trying to be proactive with the business clients, the internal clients, rather than reactive. A few additional challenges that just came to mind as well. And again, even though I'm in the music industry, this is broad across all trademarks. Like a trademark is a trademark is a trademark, regardless of your industry. The process is the same. But some other challenges facing us today are like registry backlogs.
I've heard so much about those lately. Yeah.
They just keep getting worse. And how we deal with it is by letting business units and clients know it's going to take a long time. So the sooner you have an idea, the sooner you should tell us. Additional things that pose a challenge for music specifically, actually, this would be one, is music just has a lower barrier of entry than like a hotel company.
Okay.
So because of the lower barrier of entry, the lower barrier of entry makes it so that the volume of matter that I have to review and go through is just that much larger.
Right. Yeah. I've heard so much about the backlogs from a lot of the attorneys that we've been talking to. So I can only imagine what a challenge that is right now. Let's switch gears for a second and look into the future. One of the trends that seems to be growing quite a bit, I mean, you can't really escape it. It's the topic of AI, right? It's like everywhere. And especially its role in generating creative content. Well, we'll say creative content, right? What are the potential issues or maybe even benefits that you see that are arising in IP law as a result of this trend? What are your thoughts around that?
Well, for one, Brandy, I won't tell the AI that you use quotation marks around creative. We don't want to insult them. Also, I don't think it'll care.
It does not feel, right? At least not yet.
It's not supposed to feel. Yeah, that's a fun big topic nowadays. Obstacles and opportunities. Can't talk too much about it, but what I can say is personally, I think it's, as far as trademarks and IP is concerned, it's a minefield when it comes to clearance, because I think it's obvious. It's so hard to clear. You're not sure where the work is coming from, and that's an obstacle. A fun opportunity, I think, is just the way that it's already personalizing what people hear. So you can find things you're more interested in quickly. And I'm excited about ideas of like meeting summaries, where it might be listening to your meeting and it can summarize everything that happened. That'll make the business day go much more easily. But with trademarks and IP, like, in things that I already do, AI is affecting my work in a positive way, such as like in watch notices or just clearance searches. That is a form of AI, even though it's already, you know, older and less shiny than this new AI is supposed to be that's going to take over everything.
Yeah, very interesting times for sure. I see what you mean about it really helping make life easier to some degree. We've been using it for the meeting notes as well, and we've been using it internally for other things on back end of our own platform. But I think it's going to be very interesting to watch and see how it continues to evolve for sure. On a broader level, can you talk a little bit about the role of education and public awareness in IP protection? And how we can ensure that the next generation of creators understands the importance of IP and how to protect it.
I think the next generation of creators already understands the value of IP so much more than their predecessors did. And that is a boon. So I'm excited to see what that delivers. When it comes to like creating, a lot of that is copyright law. And from a trademark standpoint, I would say, in regards to educating your clients, it's important to know what your jurisdiction is. Because we're like, we're a trademark. We're covered around the world. No, you're not. I'm sorry. It's super expensive to be covered around the world.
Right.
So look at where you really think your income's going to come from and protect yourself there first and then grow. Someplace, something that's important to be aware of is also in the jurisdictions around the world that you're interested in. Countries, jurisdictions, just another word for countries. Are they first to file or first to use? And as I'm saying this, even though like I'm aware of it and trademarks, I think, oh, like, you know, my creative friends and stuff like that, they aren't always aware of these things. So if they listen, like these are things you need to be concerned about. Because if you're first to use, you want to create something maybe as soon as you're ready to file your trademark. You don't want to just be wasting money on the idea and it's not ready yet. If it's first to file, that's when you can just put your idea out there. And higher level from an educational standpoint is if you're unsure of something, just find someone to ask, even if it's Google, because lots of people create. You're not the only one creating. And it's better to dot your T's and dot your I's and cross your T's.
Your T's, right?
No, it's better to dot your T's and cross your I's than to be caught.
Or the dyslexic way.
Yeah. After you have already created something and put all your time and effort into it. Like, just ask someone beforehand, even if it's Google, am I doing this the right way? Do I need to consider other things?
Absolutely. Look, I just had a conversation with someone this weekend, as a matter of fact, a very close family member who has a business, and it's just found out never finished with the trademark. It's like,
the United States Patent and Trademark Office website is more user-friendly than people think. And
it really is.
Yes, don't be scared of it.
It really is, for sure. Now, let's talk about, how do you balance the need for IP protection with the potential of stifling innovation and creativity? What are your thoughts around that?
This goes back to preemptively educating your client. So they need to know the necessary IP implications that affect them. So if you can, sit in on business meetings, because sometimes that isn't something that an IP professional is offered. So ask, hey, can I sit in on your marketing meeting?
Right.
And then you can nip a lot of things in the bud right there. Explain to them the difference between an application versus a registration. Just because we apply doesn't mean it's registered immediately. The final thing I'll say is just like a risk analysis. And I get to see this now sometimes when going over like song lyrics, for example. Does the artist or whoever is making the creative content accept the fact that there might be risk? And if your risks are large, then you need to have the budget for a large risk. And if they're not,
be prepared.
Exactly. Yeah. And if they're small, nominal things, you know, maybe you can like not care and water off a duck's back, or you make a little bit of change to the lyric or to the title of whatever the play is. And I haven't seen, at least in my work so far, I haven't seen the IP and trademark talk stifle creativity yet.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think they amplify it. Because
I can completely see that too. I mean, in truth, and like we all have recently seen that Ed Sheeran case too, right? I mean, that was this interesting case. I'm sure he was not expecting that at all. Why would he? You know, but it's a case of one party attempting to protect their IP, right? But I guess in truth, there's nothing really there.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing about music, because there are only so many notes and so many chords. But there really are nearly infinite outcomes. So those cases are always interesting to watch. They're pretty insightful.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, I'm glad we're not losing Ed Sheeran, that's for sure. Especially since I'm going to go see him next month.
No, he's wonderful.
He is. All right. So then let's look ahead 5 years from now. What do you think the future of IP protection is going to evolve? How do you see it evolving over the years to come?
Well, the one thing that won't change is it'll be changing.
We know that.
But yeah, in that way, I think it will fundamentally be the same as it already is. It's going to be dynamic. Something that I didn't mention earlier, which is kind of a challenge, but also something that I think will change more, is brands and people will account more for like voice and algorithm searching. So like, I don't know. An artist that comes to mind is A$AP Rocky. You know, you spell it with a little money sign.
Yeah.
But if you're spelling your name with a symbol, you need to also account for it in the way that it'll show up in a voice search.
Oh, that's such a good point. I hadn't even thought about that.
Well, you're welcome. I'll send you an invoice.
Wow. Thank you. But I mean, and how would you do that? I mean, it's A$AP, right? But then...
Yeah. I mean, as far as the trademark's concerned, it's just another trademark filing. And if you're not going to do another trademark filing, when you're doing your domain or internet stuff, maybe do it two ways. Like this product with your symbol in it, also have a way that is like how it would phonetically sound.
Interesting.
And whatever the algorithm is, because when you're not voice searching, like if someone's on their Alexa or Siri, I just activated all your Alexas and Siris.
She's turned off. She's the one thing turned off in here.
Aside from voice searching, just internet searching in general, more and more algorithms are being used. And if you can like figure out what that is, the way you maybe register your trademark can impact your bottom line. I'm not sure exactly what that entails right now, but that's why that's in the future.
Right, exactly. We're speculating about the future, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, as we wrap up our conversation, could you share three pieces of actionable advice for IP professionals out there who are listening in today and are looking to succeed at IP protection in the future?
Effective communication with the client. They don't need to know all the minutiae. What they need to know are risk, timelines, cost, those three things. And the fourth thing is mitigation strategies. Okay, it's just those four things: risk, timelines, cost, and mitigation. Preemptively educating your client. We talked about that earlier. I'm going to lump that into effective communication. Stay up to date on developments because it's integral to the field. It comes with the territory. You can do that by, I don't know, finding a publication that you like that adheres to your specific field. Or if you just want IP in general, find an IP publication or podcast, something to listen to that will keep you up to date on developments. Piggybacking off of that second point, be strategic and thoughtful about jumping on bandwagons, because you'll be listening to developments and you'll be like, ooh, this seems really sexy. This seems really cool. This is the next big thing.
Right.
Should I jump on with everyone else? I don't know. Should you? You could hurt yourself or your client. And finally, and this is like an old faithful, but preliminary searches. I mean, you don't have to do a whole comprehensive thing, but a small, and even if you have to bill someone, ask, do you want a preliminary search? As long as you have asked, you've covered your basis, and you can knock a lot of things out that may be obstacles in your endeavor to register something along the way. So those are my three things.
Very sound advice. Matthew, it has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you and having you on the podcast today.
Likewise.
I am certain our listeners have gained a great deal of insight from this. I know you mentioned your website earlier. Would you care to mention it again and anywhere else our listeners might be able to find you if they
Oh, goodness. Do you mean www.matthewwb.com? Oh, well.
That would be the one. Thanks again for coming on. It's been a joy. And thank you to our listeners for listening to another episode. And please be sure to tune in to our next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Future of IP Protection podcast brought to you by Mark Vision. If you enjoyed today's show, please do us a favor and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you'd like to learn more about how Mark Vision can help you transform your IP protection strategy, visit us at markvision.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you on the next episode.